with painting a set, and I was in this kind of closet area to the side where we used to have a paint sink there and like a little rackety shelf where we put some paint and paint supplies on it. And I was washing things in the sink, and all of a sudden a brush that was sitting on the shelf fell to the ground behind me. And I thought, oh, that's weird. It must have just not been put on the shelf. So I put it back up and then turned around to keep washing out my tools in the sink. And then only to have two or three more brushes fall off. And these brushes I knew for sure were not on the edge of the shelf or anything. It was like someone pushed them off, like took their hand and scooped them off the shelf. And I stopped what I was doing. I ran out to the lobby and I was like, it's Everett. And I think I might have been crying a little bit because I am a baby and me and Everett aren't friends.
Who's Everett? Well, remember when I said that 90% of theaters have ghosts? Well, of all the ghosts in all of the theaters that I've worked at, Everett might be my favorite. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is The Ghost Box. In 1912, the Thatcher Opera House in Hiram, Utah, burned down. The local fire department, overwhelmed with the struggle, called for help from nearby Logan City Fire Department. The Logan department arrived in time to help, but not to save the building or two or three surrounding businesses that were claimed by the blaze. Luckily, the fire occurred when the theater was empty and no one was hurt, but Cache County was down one theater. So the Thatcher family looked for somewhere to build a replacement. They settled on a spot on Center Street in Logan, Utah. In 1913, they built the Lyric Theater, a two-story proscenium-style theater with 800 seats and a modern hemp rope fly system. It was gorgeous. Intricate plaster molding adorned the walls. The proscenium was framed by the crests of six European countries and crowned by the crest of the United States. Guests entered the theater through a facade with elegant pillars, decorative windows, and plasterwork lion's head crests. I can't do it justice in words. I'll put some pics in the gram. The theater hosted vaudeville acts, traveling productions, local theater, movies, and once, a fashion show, which consisted of slides of the latest fashion plates from New York. It fell out of fashion during the tumult and scarcity of the Great Depression and World War II. After the war, an angry vandal broke in and took a hatchet to the crest of Germany, which was one of the six. It was used as a movie theater on occasion in the 50s, and finally it was acquired in the early 60s by Utah State University at the proposal of a theater professor named Vasco Call. Vasco's vision was to run a small theater company as a sort of bridge program for USU students between academic theater and practical theater, somewhere to hone their skills before sending them out to get jobs. The university restored the theater to its former glory with great attention to detail and period accuracy. Over the next four decades, the Old Lyric Repertory Company grew into a beloved theater institution in Utah. That's where I come in. I was an Old Lyric apprentice when I was 18. Somewhere I still have my official apprentice t-shirt. That's where I've heard about Everett, the ghost of a former actor who haunts the theater causing mischief. But the life of an apprentice is busy and frantic and doesn't leave a lot of time for campfire stories. So, now that the curtain is closed for a season, the theater seats are empty, and the doors are locked, let's take the time to explore the haunted halls of the Old Lyric Theater. Let's begin with another former apprentice, Morgan.
All right. I started out as an apprentice in 2010, straight as a high school graduate. And now I am currently a designer for them. I think it was the first day of my apprenticeship in 2010. We were at the Lyric and we were down in the basement where the green room is, which is right under the stage. And we had just finished listening to Vasco Call give his little history lesson about the lyric and his ghost story. And I'll be honest, I was very tired and I fell asleep through the ghost story, so I didn't even hear all of it. I felt so bad. I noticed out of the corner of my eye, like, the silhouette of a person go down into where the old dressing rooms used to be, which is now storage. And I looked at Richie Call, who was then our apprentice coordinator, and asked who that was. And everyone just kind of looked at me. There were about 12 of us. Looked at me and said, I didn't see anyone. And I'm like, oh, well, someone just went down there. And he's like, there shouldn't be anyone here besides us. So he peeked around the corner and he's like, no one's here. And I was like, I swear I saw someone. And everyone's like, you're seeing things. And I'm like, no, I swear I saw someone. And then Richie jokingly said, oh, it could have been Everett. And I was like, who's Everett? And they're like, the ghost we just learned about. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe. And so I just kind of brushed it off that I was just seeing things. It wasn't until I had later encounters that I actually gave myself credit for that one.
So who is Everett? Where did he come from?
I've been told a couple of stories that the ghost's name is Everett, and that he was an actor at the theater who, I've heard, A, he died in a fire there. I've heard that he was killed by a rival. And I heard that he killed himself because he had been fired from the theater, so he hung himself. And then I've also heard that he was a stagehand who was accidentally, either killed by a weight hitting him or a drop hitting him or something like that.
The last voice you heard was Erica, a longtime lyric actor. We'll come back to her later. But for Everett's story, let's go to the source, Vasco Call. Or at least, as close as we can get. Sadly, Vasco passed away a few years ago, but his grandson, Richie, grew up in the theater and was one of its artistic directors.
The story, as he tells it, is the early 1900s, when the Lyric was first converted into a theater by the Thatcher family, one of the first plays to come through the Lyric was a touring production of Hamlet. This production of Hamlet, before it played in Logan, had a different cast member who was playing the role of the second gravedigger than there was in Logan. So the story was that a previous actor had gone off and joined another company or had just stayed in California where they came from, and they needed to find a new actor, rehearse him, and put him into the show here in Logan for the first time. And the actor's name was Everett Jones. And they got here to Logan. He had rehearsed on the road, had memorized his lines. You know, it's not a huge part. But they were putting him in for the first time in Logan, and they were doing a day of rehearsal in the Lyric. And the second gravedigger was taking some of the laughs from the first gravedigger with some like physical things he was doing, stuff like that. And that at the break, after they had been rehearsing this, the first gravedigger said to the second gravedigger, if you keep this up, I will kill you. And some of the other cast members heard him say that. But apparently he didn't stop. And during the performance that night, there was just a one night only engagement. During the performance that night, when the first gravedigger says to the second gravedigger, go yon and fetch me a stoup of liquor, the second gravedigger is supposed to leave the scene. He's supposed to exit, you know, to supposedly go find the first gravedigger some liquor. Well, the second gravedigger took the empty flask and then walked down into the grave to make his exit. So, of course, the audience thought that was hilarious, that he was essentially going to hell to find more liquor. And the audience laughed. First gravedigger was apparently very upset. And that night after the show, nobody ever saw Everett Jones again. Logan, Utah was the last place he was ever seen. So the story goes that the first gravedigger went back to their dressing room that night and stabbed him with one of the prop swords. and buried him beneath the stage. It's also rumored that for the next performance, wherever they played after Logan, there was a new skull for Yorick that the first gravedigger provided for the actor who was playing Hamlet.
Okay. So we have a murdered actor buried under the stage. You know what's under the stage today? The green room.
My next encounter would have been, I was turning off all the lights, closing up after a show. I was working run crew for that show. And as I was down in the green room, turning off lights, I heard footsteps come behind me, and I turned around and no one was there. And so I called my mom. And I was like, Mom, this place is haunted. And I just started kind of like, I need you on the phone till I get out of this building. And I was freaking out. And then I heard the footsteps above me and then again behind me. And I'm like, this is not funny.
Before the remodel, going down this really narrow stairway, I just remember one time having the idea that I had rushed by somebody, but there was nobody else in the stairway. But I remember being able to feel hair and smell a pipe, and that was weird.
I was a set designer, designing Murder for Two. Mm-hmm. And Spencer and I were down in the, me in the green room. I should not be in the green room anymore. We were in the green room. And we were downstairs drafting a piano that we were building for the show. And we heard what we call road cases, and they're usually filled with like a ton of lighting equipment or sound equipment. We heard them like rolling across the stage, and it was so loud.
Oh, don't worry. I found Spencer.
It sounded like casters rolling over the stage. To me, it sounded like one of the rolling chairs, maybe, that were up there. And it was pretty distinct. I mean, we both were like, do you hear that? And again, middle of the day, it just sounded like something was rolling across the stage. Maybe kind of like, almost like a figure eight or something, too. Like, it wasn't like, just the way it sounded above us was just kind of leisurely rolling along.
And our first thought was, oh, lighting or sound must be here working. And I said that out loud, but I thought Pi, he was our lighting designer. He's like, I thought Pi wasn't coming in today. And I was like, oh, well, I guess he decided to. So Spencer's like, well, I'm just going to go up and check. And the reason we check is because we've had issues with people coming in who aren't supposed to be in there. They get in through the front door or the back door. Usually it's people from the bar, but that usually happens at night. And this was the middle of the day. And so he goes up there. He's like, no, I didn't see anyone, but the road cases definitely moved. They went from one side of the stage to the other. And so Spencer went and checked with the box office attendant, and they said that no one had come in but us, and they hadn't seen anyone but us.
And they would see, if anybody came in from the front, they would see them, and they definitely hear when people come in through the back. Because again, like carpenters, they're not quiet. You know, we're not quiet when we're working in the middle of the day. And she said that she didn't hear anybody come in.
And so we're down there. And then we heard it again. We just heard more movement. And we were just like, okay, we're going to ignore this. We, both him and I were scared. So we were talking about it. He's like, we're not gonna think about it. We're gonna get what we need done. When we left, we followed each other out. We were super close. We were turning off lights for each other, so neither of us was left in the dark. And then we left, and I went and got some food. And this was like maybe an hour, hour and a half later, Spencer called me, and he's like, hey, Morgan. And I was like, hey, yeah, what's up? He's like, remember when we heard the road cases move? And I was like, yeah. He's like, If there were people moving them, we would have heard the footsteps.
But if the stories are true, Everett doesn't stay confined to the green room. Apparently, he has the run of the place.
I call her my older, scenic, big sister. Annie, a good friend, had, I think when we were maybe working together at TuaCon, before I moved up to Logan, told me this ghost story about this ghost at this theater in Logan named Everett who wore a brown suit. And she heard him in the paint room. So I heard the story from my scenic big sister, Annie, and didn't think about it for a long time. So then, if I remember right, it was kind of like midday. It wasn't nighttime. There was nothing like spooky or out of the ordinary. And we were loading in some furniture through the front door off of Center Street, little door that went through the gallery. And then there's the backstage door that went to the paint room. And so I think we were lifting a bench, like it was ungodly heavy. So I'm wrestling this bench through the door and I punch in the key code and throw the door open and I look through the gallery, you know, and it's maybe, I don't know, it's maybe 30 feet. It's not a big room, but it's also not a small room. And I see in that paint room, a man who turns around and then ducks into the paint room. And my first thought is I see this guy turn around and it was kind of like out of the corner of my eye as I turn and look straight down there and I just see someone go into the paint room. And I go, shit. Like my first thought is there's a drunk that's wandered in from the bar next door, that owl in the middle of the day. And it was so real that I didn't think about it. I just think there's someone in this building and I don't know what they're doing back there. So we put the bench down. I can't remember who's helping me move it. But we walk through and turn the corner into the paint room, nobody there. There's no way in, no way out. There was nothing to hide under. And I didn't break eye contact because, again, I thought it was like some bum from the bar that had wandered in. So that's kind of when it all sinks in. And I realize, oh, my God, that's what Annie told me. Annie told me about this man in the paint room that she had seen. Here's the paint room. And Annie had said that she'd heard voices. She'd heard him talk before. This was the ghost that Annie had seen. And so after that, I was a little nerved out about the lyric ghost because it was plain as day. I know that I've been in other theaters or other places that were maybe haunted and you kind of psych yourself out. Like, oh, I saw something. Ooh. Like it was just so visceral. Like there was no doubt in my mind. It was so real. And in my mind, I want to say he was wearing a brown suit and kind of looked old fashioned, but you know, I don't know how much of that is kind of nostalgia mixing with kind of your brain filling in the blanks of a schema. But there was definitely someone there. It was clear as day. I saw them move, didn't break eye contact. And there was no one in that paint room. There was nothing spooky. There was nothing. I mean, it was spooky after the fact, but it was just clear as day. And you know, I'm a little witchy poo sometimes. Like I definitely think you can feel an energy. You can get a sense of something as good or bad. And there was nothing, there's no feelings of malice. There was nothing dark. It was kind of like maybe, I don't know, almost maybe an echo. Like it was just a glimpse between worlds.
Here we are back in the paint room. The same room Morgan was in at the beginning of the episode. But the paint room isn't Everett's favorite haunt.
I had been in two or three shows as a child that took place at Old Lyric Repertory Company. And this is before it had been remodeled and refinished. So there were catacombs and a very, very strange basement underneath. And the whole thing had this very old vaudeville kind of feeling.
Remember Erica? Here's her story.
I think the production was probably The Wizard of Oz. I would have been about 8 years old. But I'm not quite sure which show it was because they all blend together. But I do remember we were having a note session and we were sitting on the stage at the Lyric. And from the stage with the house lights on, you can see very clearly into the balcony. So we're getting notes or some kind of choreography fix, and most of the cast is on stage. And I remember it being a large group of girls. And we look up into the balcony at this closed rehearsal, and you can see a figure moving up there, and he is looking down at us from the balcony, sort of backlit with the lighting. It looked like a shadow, like a backlit sort of shadow. It was definitely the figure of a man, and we all had the impression that he was leaning forward, and I remember that. I remember thinking it was weird that I couldn't see very well who it was, because I thought with the lighting in the room, I would be able to see someone up there. This was just the shape of a person in a shadow. The director, who I believe was a college student, notices that our focus has been pointed up towards the balcony, and she sees this person too, and she says, "Hey, this is a closed rehearsal. What are you doing here?" And the person turns around, as far as we can tell, and starts moving towards the stairs. So she books it through the theater up to the single staircase that leads to the balcony, and we see her head popping up into the entrance of the balcony as this figure is turning down on the balcony. But she never saw him. He disappeared coming down the stairs. And then we just see her and we don't see him anymore. And she did not run into him, and there was no other entrance to the balcony. And I just remember everybody on the stage getting really cold and really kind of quiet for a second. I just remember that everybody went, okay, well, it's time to go. But everybody was checking doors around the front of the theater and the back doors, just making sure that nobody was still in the building. And this man had disappeared. This figure had disappeared. We all saw him. He never said anything, but he just disappeared. I am a skeptic. I think I was a pretty skeptical kid too, but that scared me. It's stuck in my mind. It is stuck in my mind for 30 some odd years, because it was so real to see that guy disappear and to know that the director didn't run into a body coming down the stairs. It was really freaky.
The one time that I actually was scared, again, middle of the day, you know, nothing creepy happening outside, nothing dark and stormy. It wasn't 1 a.m. And I had just got to town and was meeting with the director, Terrence. So I got to the theater a little bit early, kind of looked around the set dressing and was sitting in the hairdryer chair, just waiting for Terrence to show up. I think I was just kind of thumbing through my phone absentmindedly, just waiting. And then up in the balcony of the theater, kind of by the sound booth, so in the balcony, not tucked away in a room, I hear this really strange kind of like electrical surge. It's like, and that scared me because I thought the summer before there had been a small electrical fire from a light, and my first thought is, oh God, I'm going to burn to death in this firebox of the theater. And so I stand up and I'm still looking at the booth, like looking for smoke, and as soon as I stand up, I just hear seats start to drop. Thud, 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 thud. Like a whole row just drop. And you've been to Lyric, right? And you know how old those seats are. They don't move easy. Like, you do kind of have to pull them down. And I booked it. I that was just pure adrenaline. I heard those seats dropping. I knew what it was. And I couldn't see anything moving, but it was unmistakably the sound of these seats just dropping in rapid fire. So I run out the back door of the theater, just run. I'm a little chubby, so I don't run fast, but I ran fast that day. Took me a while, like a couple days before I could talk to anyone about it, because it was just so, I don't know what it was, you know, it wasn't the person apparition, but it was just this unusual sound, and then just this unexplicable phenomenon. There's no way that someone could have been in there just yanking my chain for as fast as it moved. There's no way to explain it. Legend has it the house right balcony loge is Everett's seat. And I guess that kind of comes from the fact that the light directly under it, or maybe it was above it, I don't know, wouldn't work. It wouldn't flicker. Or sometimes it would turn on, and when it turned on, they knew he was there. And that goes back way back to Vosco, when Vasco, his original story of coming to the Lyric, and he was rehearsing maybe Hamlet.
And then the way my grandfather, the first time he ever had an experience himself, it was in the late 50s after the theater department, well, the university had purchased the theater from the Thatcher sisters. They would open the theater, reopen the theater with a production of Hamlet. And my grandpa was both directing and playing Hamlet. And he was one of the only people that had a key. And so sometimes he would go down to the theater all by himself and work in there late into the night on his soliloquies and things like that. And he was the only one in the theater, and he was up there working on the "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave" soliloquy. And he got to the moment when he said, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I? Is it not monstrous that this player here..." And when he said that, the word "player," he heard giggling. And so he stopped, and he thought, well, I just, you know... I mean, anybody who spent any time in the Lyric, whether they were with people or by themselves, you know that the building makes a lot of, you know, noises. It's an old building. And so he thought, oh, I'm just imagining things. So he started over. "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I? Is it not monstrous that this player here..." He'd hear giggling. And that second time he thought, no, I'm definitely hearing giggling. So he stopped and he said, "Is anybody out there? Hello?" There was no response. So he started over one more time. "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I? Is it not monstrous that this player here..." And then he heard even louder giggling. And then he got upset. And he said, "All right, who's out there?" And, you know, at that time, the building was a lot more self-contained than it is now, once we purchased Tilly's Bar in 2000 for the renovation. There's that side. There's another side of the Lyric. But back then, it was like, you could hop off the stage, go up one possible staircase to the balcony, and that was it. There was no way in or out other than that. So he walked up to the balcony to see if there was somebody up there, because that's where he had heard the laughter from, but there was nobody up there. And so that was his first experience, and he kind of just thought, well, maybe I'll go home. Didn't really think too much of it. But it happened several times while he was working on different moments, and particularly when there were references to clowns or players, he would hear laughter up in the balcony. It was always from the house right side. And so that was the beginning of the idea that whenever the ghost was there, he sat in that front loge seat on the house right side of the theater.
Don't worry. Richie isn't just a collector of Lyric ghost stories. He has his own.
I had never heard of the ghost story until I was 8 years old, and I was eight and I was spending the summer with my grandparents in Logan. And my grandma used to run the Unicorn Children's Theater, which was around the corner from the Lyric. And then I would go hang out with my grandpa at the Lyric in the evenings for rehearsals there. One afternoon I was there, and I used to hang out in the light booth. And at the time, there was a technical director there named Kim, and Kim used to let me, you know, back then there weren't any computers up there. There were these big, you know, switches and dimmers, and I don't think I ever actually did anything. He would just let me play around with the equipment up there. And I was hanging out with him during a rehearsal, and he said, "Hey, would you run down to the corner and get me some coffee?" So he gave me a $5 bill and told me to go get him coffee and that I could use the change to get myself whatever I wanted. So I went down to the corner, I got him coffee, I got me Twizzlers nibs, and I went running back to the theater. When I walked in through the front doors there, I turned to the right to go up the balcony, and Kim was walking down the stairs. And so I handed him his coffee and I passed him going up the stairs to go back up to the light booth, which is where I had my backpack and stuff. And so when I got to the light booth, Kim was there. And I was confused, and he was confused because I didn't have his coffee. He said, "Where's my coffee?" And I didn't really say anything to him. I just turned around and went back down the stairs, and where I had handed Kim his coffee, right at the corner of the stairs there, the coffee cup was sitting there on the newel post. And I was, you know, I didn't think ghost. I didn't think, I was just confused. And, you know, I thought, did I see somebody else? But I thought, no, I definitely saw Kim. I handed Kim his coffee and then I saw him upstairs. So I grabbed the coffee. I took it up to him, but it felt really weird and eerie. So I just handed him the coffee. I grabbed my backpack and I ran down to sit next to my grandpa for the rest of rehearsal. And when rehearsal got out, my grandpa could see that I was, you know, concerned or worried about something. And he said, what happened? And I told him this whole story. And I think most grandpas at that point would have said, oh, it was all in your imagination. But my grandpa said, well, I think it's time you heard about the lyric ghost.
Okay, full disclosure, it is unlikely that a murdered actor is buried under the old lyric. The lyric has been remodeled and restored multiple times in its life, and as far as I can tell, no human remains have been found. Vasco even admitted that he embellished the story for a folklore class. See, when Vasco told the story, he said that when the company left Logan, Everett Jones wasn't with them. Which is true, because Everett was a local who filled in temporarily and had no plans to continue with the tour. And, like, what touring actor has the time and means to fully render and articulate a human skull? Just think about the time and effort and chemicals that would take. And, like, where would he do it? It's not like the theater company was paying for a house. It was probably in, like a boarding house. But I digress. Point being, maybe Everett isn't a vengeful murder victim. But then who's the man in the paint room? Who was the shadow in the balcony? And whoever he is, why is he here?
And I think I was really taken aback by that story too. Like, how horrifying. And is this a malevolent, like, horrid ghost? Is he fixed for revenge now? Or does he just miss the theater and love watching us? And I think I've the mythology that I turned it into in my 15 or so different years that I was doing different things at the Lyric, has turned into that he's very kind and that he loves the theater and that he's there to protect it. That feels better to me.
There's never been anything malevolent with him, you know, just kind of letting us know he's there. And part of the allure of Lyric is also the ghost, you know. Every theater needs a good ghost, and I don't think you could ask for a better ghost than Everett. Like, the right mix of chilling, the right mix of friendly, the right mix of just kind of everything. So the Lyric family and the Lyric lore is also, I think, a big part of the community there and making the art, you know?
I can personally vouch the old Lyric is a really fun place to work. It's sort of a family place. There's a real sense of community. And there's great theater being made. So maybe Everett just shares those feelings. There's a folk belief that when working in the theater alone, you should say hello and goodbye to Everett. So maybe he's not sad and lonely and vengeful. Maybe he's not looking for his lost skull. Maybe he's just an old actor who wants to be part of the company.
I mean, if you go into the Lyric and you're there by yourself or working, just make sure you tell Everett that you're there. And he might be nice and leave you alone.
Thank you for listening. The Ghost Box is produced, written, and all the things by me, Dory Peacock, with help from our four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams. And by help, I mean distraction. I want to thank Morgan, Erica, Spencer, and Richie for sharing their stories for this episode. If you have a story that you'd like to share with us, email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com. or slide into our DMs on Instagram at theghostboxpod. If you enjoyed this episode, why not rate and review on iTunes? And if you didn't like it, well, I guess that's your right as a hominid. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Stay spooky. Risboard, you know, when you respore a building. Logan City Defire Department? This is way too much dialogue. Why did I write myself a long-ass monologue?
So cool. I mean, a career in the theater, I've done much worse for much less. So.
we all have at some point.
Uh-huh. And you can use that quote, too.